Las de Washington a la selección china de personas que presentan al mundo la antorcha olímpica se ha transformado en una lección de derechos humanos para la Unión Americana. Beatriz Salas amplía la información.
Decidir sobre quiénes serán los portadores de la antorcha en la ceremonia inaugural de los Juegos Olímpicos de Invierno en Pekín es la responsabilidad de China, y Estados Unidos no está en posición de hacer comentarios despectivos. Así respondió Pekín a la reciente interferencia de Washington, quien aseveró que la elección de China del atleta de la etnia Uyghur, de Nijir Jilamujian, para llevar la antorcha olímpica es un esfuerzo de Pekín para distraer la atención del llamado genocidio en la región de Xinjiang.
Los llamados comentarios de genocidio de Estados Unidos son la gran mentira del siglo y exponen su intento de politizar los Juegos Olímpicos de Invierno y su siniestra intención de utilizar el tema relacionado con Xinjiang para difamar a China.
China asimismo acusó a Estados Unidos de mentir de manera descarada sobre las minorías étnicas, mientras olvida sistemáticamente discriminaciones en su propio suelo.
Estados Unidos llevó a cabo un genocidio contra los nativos americanos en el pasado y ha discriminado sistemáticamente a las minorías raciales a largo plazo. La población de nativos americanos se ha desplomado de 5 millones a finales del siglo XV a unos 250 mil a principios del siglo XX, reduciéndose a una vigésima parte. ¿Qué es el genocidio? Las políticas que Estados Unidos ha impuesto a los nativos americanos son un verdadero genocidio.
Zhao, además de criticar la discriminación racial contra los africanos y asiáticos en Estados Unidos, dijo que elegir a un atleta de la etnia Uyghur muestra que la política de China de promover los deportes de invierno y mejorar la salud de las personas está beneficiando a individuos de todos los grupos étnicos y prueba que no existe discriminación.
Lo que Estados Unidos debería estar haciendo es revisar cuidadosamente sus propios crímenes históricos contra los nativos americanos y tomar medidas concretas para reducir la discriminación racial contra estas personas y otras minorías raciales, como los africanos y asiáticos.
China, en reiteradas ocasiones, ha instado a Estados Unidos a dejar de usar los asuntos vinculados con Xinjiang para difundir mentiras, interferir en los asuntos internos de China o intentar detener el desarrollo del país. Advierte que, de lo contrario, Pekín dará una respuesta más contundente a la luz del desarrollo de la situación. Beatriz Salas, con información de Niloufar Shakuri, Hispan TV Noticias.
Migrantes de todos los rincones del mundo duermen bajo su mismo cielo estrellado. Me los encuentro en las calles, en los cines, en los supermercados, y el olor de sus comidas me embriaga de placer. Todos ellos son mis vecinos.
Y yo aquí vivo, bajo sus leyes domésticas, pago impuestos y mis manos producen la riqueza nacional.
Soy parte de esa comunidad que vive, trabaja y sueña con una mañana mejor para nuestras familias.
Casi todos migrantes como yo, casi todos soñadores como yo.
Trabajemos pues en la construcción de otra nación que nos haga dignos.
Seamos los arquitectos de nuestro sueño colectivo.
Esta radio no tiene comerciales porque tú nos apoyas. Si ya has hecho una aportación económica, te damos las gracias. Si no, hazlo ahora en kpfk.org o llama al 818-985-5735.
Así llegamos al final de esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro más profundo agradecimiento a todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Told me, you know, we'll give you a day, we'll give you a week, however long it takes for you to accept our help to be healed and to become a child of God and denounce being gay.
Honoring the memory of Dr. Anonymous, coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
got three quarters of the way through several times and was like, well, I have no idea how this would end, so I have to start over. But one thing I know is I can't end a story without hope.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Nicaragua's NGO Purge targets its oldest queer group. Gay Taiwanese movie sings out a universal love song and upending the artistic process with Amanda Kayback. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Joe Bainline.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 28, 2021. The government of Nicaragua is aiming to shut down the country's oldest LGBTQ advocacy group. The Interior Ministry has asked the National Assembly to annul the legal nonprofit status of Fundación Xiquetzal and 14 other non-governmental organizations. President.
Pleading ill health, I am playing you a flashback today for this edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the March 17, 2022 edition. You're going to be going back to January 1st, 1996, and there's a variety of items that are coming up, which I will describe right after our traditional theme song.
Tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs, they simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic, I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking, why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Social significance, all other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
And now immediately, well, just a quick disclaimer, there are any songs of social significance on this particular netcast. In fact, I don't think there are any songs at all, because in 1996 it was sometimes a somewhat tumultuous going. We had, I think, four people in the studio chatting away about issues that were then very current to a lot of us, some of us more than others, because some of us were unhoused and others were just simply sympathetic. This was, of course, New Year's Day, 1996, and we had come out of a December where a campground, the largest permitted campground that had ever been the case in Santa Cruz in recent memory, had been dispersed by a group that ironically was calling itself the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. And so it's all about the betrayal of the homeless. We have in the studio, as you'll hear, I call her now Beggarbacker Becky Johnson, of an very articulate woman who was involved with Community TV and various other groups, but and involved with me as well at that time. And we had Mushroomic, who is, I believe, a homeless guy, Coral Brunn, an artist, numerous phone calls from different people, a different audio from the Citizens Committee for the Homeless's board of directors meeting where they shut us down when we tried to present a petition and a protest, a message from Calamity Jane Immler, who is an old-time homeless activist who was very active at the beginning of the beginning of the 90s, the end of the 80s, and the middle of the 80s when she did hunger fasts to, in fact, prompt the starting of the first ever homeless shelter in Santa Cruz, the cold and rainy night shelter, the Cedar Street shelter, which is down in the building where the Kumbwa Jazz Center now sits, or I think they're still sitting there. Various callers, some people may remember, Just Man Jim Costner, Lighthouse Linda LeMaster, and there's a report from Lighthouse Linda and me are trying to get a complaint regarding a business owner, and at that time a very anti-homeless guy, Stuart Martin, who's part of the ID building. If you remember the ID building, which used to be across from the Bookshop Santa Cruz, I think there's another building there now. And Stuart, to give him credit, has changed his ways. He is no longer, as far as I know, hostile, at least not overtly hostile, to homeless folks. And I kind of had a reconciliation with him. I wasn't angry with him as an individual, but rather for his actions. He was continually trying to get rid of homeless people who were tabling in front of his shop, as did Bookshop Santa Cruz owner Neil Coonerty at that time, continued in that tradition by Ryan Coonerty, both of whom went into politics to the detriment of the homeless community here in Santa Cruz. I think there's some New Year's Eve reports before December 22nd, lengthy report on how difficult it was trying to file a police report about Stuart Martin's apparent assault on a homeless man. And it's what you're getting today, a flashback. Perhaps Sunday will be more current. I hope so. I may be more current myself. And if you have anything you want to let me know about in terms of events that are happening around homeless camps, which are now reportedly under threat of closure, that's along Hills Trail is what I'm hearing, that Monday the 27th. Actually, it's the 28th. No, it's the 21st. I got it. Calendar's a little screwy here. I'm a little screwy looking at the calendar. There's a vacate date by then. So, but anything you hear that you think might be better broadly known in the community, please give me a call. 831-423-4833. Or better still, post it yourself on your social networks. But let me know, too, and I will add to the clamor. So listen in and go back to 1996. And I'm afraid you'll find that not a lot has changed in terms of the police sense of entitlement and its directives about treating one class of people one way and another class another way. Similarly, you'll find that poverty pimpery continues in full flower now, as it was then, sometimes with more kindly faces, and sometimes not.
You are in touch with 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. It's the first day of the year, 1996. I'm Bathrobe's Pierre Robert Knowles, the robe, if you will. For 2 hours, we're going to be talking civil rights for the poor, betrayal of the homeless, and what you can do to end this situation and to essentially secure civil rights for all of us. Every Monday and Friday, we have Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides, a two-hour and sometimes longer show devoted to the rights of those on the streets, under the bridges, and wherever we happen to find a place. With me in the studio is my co-host for the day, best in the business, Becky Johnson. Becky, kind of belly up to the mic here and say hi. And we also have one. If this mic is working, which...
Testing 1, 2, 3. Can you hear me, Santa Cruz?
They can hear you. Now, can they hear me? Can you hear me? Yeah, this mic is a little quieter. We have Mushroomic, and then we have, it's Coral creeping in from the rear.
Ah.
So we have a cast of stars today to hit you right where it matters. We've got an incoming phone call here. Let's see if that's worth taking. Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Just wanted to tell you that we can hear you well.
Good. Excellent, Alan. We can hear you. Anything you want to say briefly to the audience?
Point.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Yeah, we were having a few problems earlier in the show, a minute and a half ago, worrying that our signal wasn't getting out. But we are getting out.
Yay!
We are here, yes.
96, we're still getting out.
96, and those are tricks. All right, so actually we should give you the sensitive mic. We'll do the shouting over here.
Huh?
Mushroomic is with us. Mushroomic is one of the notorious River Street refugees who have until noon today to hit the road, Jack, down the road, down the...
Not planning any illegal sleeping, are you, Mushroomic?
I don't know about you.
Yes,
you better belly up to the mic, big guy.
Absolutely.
Closer. Move that chair in. Let's get intimate here. Come on, big boy. We know each other.
Actually, because I knew that everything was going to go on today, I actually packed up and left yesterday. And yes, I am way out in the woods, and you may see me coming cruising down Route 9 on my little copper bicycle, and that's the things that we need to see.
Kiss the mic.
So,
don't blow in it.
Right.
No blowing.
So it looks to me like I'm already out of there.
So, Mushroomic, you were telling me that, in fact, Barbara Riverwoman of the River Street Refugees and Dragon Sardan, hey, including, William Walker, then my notorious critic, hi there, William, all campers or friends of the campers were saying that there was an $800 anonymous donation that was slipped to the campers to enable them to hustle and find another campground. Is this true?
And I was there, and I could not believe. I came in from the town, and as I come in, and they were talking about what we're going to do, I go, where are we going to get the money? And they shouted to me, didn't you know we got an $800 donation? And I go, no, I just got here. And I tried to find out who it was from, and it's going to, I guess, stay anonymous.
It's an anomalous donation, folks. Also, however, we should be aware this does not in any way affect the fate of hundreds of other homeless people who have no legal place to sleep, thanks to the kindly closure by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, as they call themselves. And we're going to be delving into that subject in particular more deeply this morning, because last Thursday, that Citizens Committee, which controls the open-air shelter property, also known as the Coral, no relation to our Coral Street Shelter,
It's a famous word.
Coral is in the background. If you can't hear her, well, she'll talk louder. Maybe she'll come closer. That could be exciting.
Yeah, I do want to say something.
You got to get in.
To Barbara.
Okay. You can't be heard at that distance, I don't think.
Oh.
So you got to get in here. Here, sit on my lap. That's right. Okay, nestle a little closer. Just kidding, folks. We don't do any of that.
It probably happens the first day of the year. Okay. All is merriment. I mean, right. It's not going to happen.
Kiss the mic.
I does it have a knot in the cord? It's hi, everyone.
It's a knotty situation. We have an incoming call.
On a train, I think we should answer it.
It's Free Radio Santa Cruz, your radio.
Yeah, listen.
Oh, no. Al, this is call number two.
Yeah, listen. Good. Okay, brain damage. Listen, well, I can hear you very
Al,
well.
Al, turn your radio down.
You could, okay. You could stay, you could be 9,000 feet away from that. I'll just take over the phone.
Okay.
You could stay 9,000 feet from that mic, and it's going to pick up.
So you can still hear.
The board, you have your dials up on the board, right? The best thing to do is put your dials all the way up on your both mics and sit back and relax and hang out,
I'm not
and
sure
everybody can hear you.
Yes, okay, well, we appreciate your input, Al, and thank you for your advice.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Now back to where we are. My name's Coral, and thanks to Barbara Riverwoman, I have a photo board that I made. And at some time, I will get with you and give it to you, because I think you would probably enjoy it the most. It's pictures of the old campground, no people up too close, except Mr. Daryl Darling, whom I told I was taking this picture. And a picture of the sign that you painted by Leo Tolstoy, and a few other pictures of the new Brighton Beach area. So whenever I can get in touch with you, I think you'd like it.
Unfortunately, Barbara does not usually listen to this show. So futile but well-intentioned proclamation. Well, what we do have to begin with is a sort of a message from one of our old cohorts, Jane Immler, from about a week ago. I hope I haven't played this message for you already, but if I have, hey, it's worth listening to again. Jane Immler is an activist whom we called Calamity Jane back in the late 80s when she was leading the charge against corrupt... what we call them, corrupt is a little strong. I guess she would say corrupt, but I certainly would say priority screwed bureaucrats, short-sighted poverty pimps, and definitely anti-homeless politicians on the city council. We have the same brew today, interestingly enough, and here it is, 1996. So it's, the more they change, the more they come back into office, kind of like the rotating councilperson, RoboCop Mike Rotkin. You may remember him. He's been on the air a number of times in the last 2 weeks. Recall Rotkin?
Recall
Rotkin. I hear the call for recall. Hey, well, send your cards and letters to Big Mike. And by the way, if you want to call City Council about the closure of the open-air shelter, and they'll, of course, tell you it has nothing to do with them. But in fact, Mike Rotkin has said that the open-air shelter could not reopen tomorrow because the police would close it. And guess who the police are involved with? They don't work for the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, I can tell you. They work for the city. And though they're not under the direct command of the city council, what the city council says, what the mayor says, has a lot to do with what the police do. So if you want to stop this charade of homeless hot potato, where the Citizens Committee for the Homeless says, we can't open the shelter because the city won't let us, and the city throws back the potato and says, we can't allow that because the Citizens Committee is private property, call the city and tell them, allow the open-air shelter to be opened immediately. It's vacant. There's nothing happening on it. It's quite usable. It's not a mud pit. It's not a health hazard, at least certainly less of a health hazard than sleeping under bridges, hiding outside, and risking violence from troll busters and midnight wake-up calls from the cops. 429-3550 is a city council number, and though it's New Year's Day, you can still call in because they have a recording machine which will record you in every single one of your words. Let's hear a little bit now from, again, Jane Immler, Calamity Jane, the activist whose hunger strikes established the first cold and rainy night shelter at Cedar Street, actually motivated the purchasing of the property at River Street on which the open-air shelter now sits, with homeless monies, mind you, which has been hijacked by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless and its 48-person million-dollar trailer project, Community House. We actually have a board member of the Citizens Committee of the Homeless as a co-host today. Yes, a little-known fact is that the best in the business, Becky Johnson here, is not merely a photojournalist, not merely a conspirator for homeless rights, but she's also a board member of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. Isn't that true, Becky?
That's true, and I'm a damn good rollerblader as well.
Well, there you go. Rollerbladers take note. We're going to talk to Becky about what happened, just what happened at the meeting.
Must you?
I'm afraid so. And we have another witness here. Coral was present on Thursday when the Citizens Committee for the Homeless did its thingamabob. But
can't describe it.
It really requires a tape, which luckily I happen to have right here in my hot pocket.
Oh, my God, we have to relive this.
You're going to relive the final moments of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless meeting. We are going to I'm going to preempt the Jane Immler tape. I promised you Jane. I'll give you Jane a little later. We're also going to be discussing Stuart Martin, the manager of the ID building, who has recently assaulted a homeless person, said that all homeless people are thieves, and discriminated against and evicted homeless people.
What a guy.
He's a man for the holiday spirit in Santa Cruz. I would say Rotkin has to run a second to Stuart Martin. But Rotkin is the mayor, so I think we can expect more from Rotkin. Martin is simply the manager of the ID building, which for all of you folks who don't know, is a large building on the corner across from the Bookshop Santa Cruz.
Hard to tell who to give the Scrooge Award to this year.
Maybe we should have a roast of the most quotable city officials and et cetera.
I think so. We were actually talking about a Golden Turkey Award for first night, and I did do a little flyering of Stuart Martin's ID building with a shout of boycott bigotry, and I guess Skidmark's Bob in his show last night picked up some of that and was kind of roaming the mall with Phil Free, renegade musician and a busker, for those who like weird and exciting words. But here is a little something that will kind of set the tone for today's show. Every month, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless's executive board meets once a month on Thursday at 4 o'clock at Garfield Park Church. Becky, you've been on the board for what, about four months?
4 months, I think.
And you've been at most of these meetings?
Well, the last four.
And you were a little late coming to this meeting, as I remember, to my chagrin.
Ah.
But you did show up, and of course, what happened was we had a number of campers who were at the meeting from the Brighton State Beach River Street Refugee Clan. We had a couple of community member activists. Bob Riverman, I believe, was there. Bob Campbell, who had at one time had run several, we called him a poverty pimp on air, actually. When he called in the last show, I distinguished him by pointing out that at one time he was a well-known poverty pimp.
That goes over real big.
It does, yes. Yeah. PP, we call them. It's kind of a poo-poo, actually.
I guess I'm a poverty pimpette.
Well, I don't know. Are you getting paid to move homeless people from one place to another, or to, should we say, close down the facilities that homeless people are using? That's what Daryl Darling is getting paid to do.
Do they pay anyone to be quiet? That's what I want to know.
I don't know about that, Carl, but I know that Daryl Darling and Paul Merceau are the two chief suspects here. In fact, not even the suspects. They are, in fact, the culprits in the current scandal around the open-air shelter. That is a scandal which, in brief, as I've said before on the air, involves the fact that the campers, the users, the residents and tenants of the open-air shelter were verbally promised, a contract was made with them on November 29th, that they would not be told to leave that property or asked to leave that property, essentially until February. And why do I say until February? Well, the actual agreement was January 1st, they would be given a 10-day notice, or whenever the permits for the so-called community house trailer project was granted. And that now turns out to be at the earliest January 25th. So it'll be 10 days after that. That's early February. The only exception to this was if there was such a torrential rain downpour, let us say worse than last year or like last year, that it made the field truly uninhabitable. And there was a lot of discussion around this, how people would move their tents to higher ground, how they'd weatherproof their tents and put them on pallets, how those with less tent-worthy tents would be going to the armory anyway, how there'd be drains dug, how a pump would, and in fact was, acquired in case there was a temporary flooding situation. But after the first rain, Paul Merceau, in spite of his and Daryl Darling's solemn promise to the campers, closed the open-air shelter without any negotiations or discussion in blatant violation of their promise.
Robert, I think you mischaracterized it.
Go ahead, Becky. I'm being criticized here.
I don't think it was a solemn promise.
Oh, I see. Sort of a smirking promise, eh? Well, sort of a jovial joke. I guess you're right. I stand corrected. It wasn't really a solemn promise. It was more of a side-splitting aside by Joe. called Darling and Palmer. So, thank you for the correction, Becky. I sit corrected, actually, here.
They didn't swear in the Bible, so maybe...
No, they didn't swear in the Bible. The Bible was not involved in this, but perhaps it should be. We should. These are, after all, church... Yeah, these are church people.
Priests. No, they're priests.
They're priests. Well, Daryl Darling he has a church. All these guys have churches. You know, this is the Citizens Committee for the Homeless and the Interfaith, get that, Faith Satellite Shelter Program. These are men of the cloth. We can see just what cloth they're made out of from how their promises are kept. Well, in any case, Darling, cheap cloth, the Emperor's New Clothes type cloth, invisible cloth. So, you feel free to get in here, either of you guys, to comment on this.
I know, and this isn't pertinent to this. I just want to know what conditions went with that $800 donation. I did hear that the guys did have to stick together if they wanted to use the money.
What's that mean?
I think it basically was only to be used for camping at campgrounds, and that was it. I tried to say, well, can we put it into certain funds that can make its own money? And they said, no, only for that, and that's it. And because I was basically hoping on making it grow from that much money. But here's the other thing, is that the campers are trying to get together the people, the few of them do have money from SSI, to maybe they'll kick in their money, and the people who don't have any money will use that, so that maybe we can stretch just $800 so that it can last and help them to march, if possible.
Quite possibly. Again, I return to the Citizens Committee for the Homeless's Board of Directors meeting of last Thursday. I was kind of giving you an intro as to what the promise was that was made by Daryl Darling and Palmer So to the campers 2 months before, on November 29th. Actually, 1 month before, on November 29th.
Now, if you have sensitive ears or their children present, you might want to turn the volume down.
Yes, this is an X-rated tape coming up, folks.
It's not pretty.
It contains spectacles of dignified and respectable men selling out poor people who they are paid to help. It contains a spectacle of well-established authors like Paul Lee, the author of the book The Quality of Mercy, mercilessly aborting a meeting in order to avoid the revelation of information that might be embarrassing to him or his fellows on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. You will hear the loud and raucous comments of activist Robert Norris, a notorious individual in the community. Who,
oh, yeah, watch out for that guy.
He's ranting and raving. Actually, he doesn't rant and rave so much, but he does raise his voice, no question about it. You're going to be listening to the last few minutes of the Thursday monthly Citizens Committee board meeting where campers tried to bring to the attention, actually the campers had other issues, where I and another person tried to bring to the attention of the... One of them was a camper, actually, Dragon Sard Dan Hopkins. He tried to bring that to their attention. The issue of the lie and the broken promise that was made to the campers, which makes the Citizens Committee... not only is it a stain on their conscience, not only is it a blight on their reputation, but it also is a legally actionable broken contract. So let's begin to hear the end of this meeting. And, hey, meanwhile, you can always call in 427-3772 if you'd rather hear something else, like, I don't know, Happy Days or something. We could put on some elevator music for the rest of the night. No, we won't do that. Here's a little Citizens Committee for the Homeless on December 28th. Go for it.
Thank you.
head, Paul Lee, who controlled the chair and eventually disbanded the meeting rather than answer the question about... Well, I wanted to play for him a tape that showed a promise between Paul Meursault, Daryl Darling, and the campers of a month before. It was a clear documentary record, as I wanted to bring it to the attention of the Citizens Committee, because the Citizens Committee had authorized these two men to speak and negotiate on its behalf. I'll simply now play the tape without interruption, and we'll probably play the tape again toward the end of this two-hour show with more discussions, although Becky, no doubt, will have something to say.
We
about
won't
that.
Bleep it out, either.
No bleeps. Hang in there.
You know,
Scott, council member, is speaking now. She was on the Open Air Shelter Site Subcommittee of City Council and also has been a longtime member of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. She has never spoken in favor of moving Community House or retaining the Open Air Shelter on the site where it is, however. We continue to the climactic end of this meeting.
I think
And that was the breakup of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless meeting of Thursday, December 28th. So rather than hear a minute and a half segment in which their two authorized representatives made a contract with the campers of the open-air shelter and then broke it, Paul Lee broke up the meeting and sent everybody home, no doubt to get together again privately, as he often does. This used to be a favorite tactic of Paul Lee's and Paige Smith's back in the late 80s and early 90s. Daryl Darling assured me that things are different these days, that things are never done that way, but I think we can see that the same old tactics are operating. Becky, you were present for at least half this meeting. Coral, you were there for part of the meeting as well. It looked to me like they didn't want to hear the tape, and they also didn't want to deal with the issue of hundreds of people essentially thrown out of a legal place to sleep on a piece of property that wasn't even going to be used for the next month. What are your readings on that?
Well, first off, anyone who thinks these board meetings are dull and boring, as you can see, we have plenty of excitement at CCH.
Yes. I guess it's more the exception than the rule, however.
I don't know. Last two meetings have been pretty exciting.
Yeah.
So I'm going 50-50 now.
Mm-hmm.
My take on it, obviously there's some sort of a deep-seated rivalry between yourself, Robert, and Dr. Paul Lee.
I want to be the head of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. I've wanted that for a long time, I have to admit, yes.
Yes, and the secret strivings to become a poverty pimp yourself.
PP longings, we call it.
Well, I did observe that Paul Lee did seem unwilling to have you have your say at all. I assume that this arose from some rivalry that is based in the past. I've heard tell about this from others, that this has been an ongoing problem. I guess problem in the sense that there's a lot of friction and heat and smoke and not too much light. I'm really caught in a dilemma on this, because I perceive both of you as being people that have really put yourselves out a lot on issues of homelessness, and that I believe that both of you care deeply, and that it would be a great thing if you actually were working on the same side. This obviously didn't happen at this meeting. As far as you're playing the tape, I don't know if it was so much the tape as it was that they had already predetermined that your point of view and just didn't want to hear it. I thought it was unfortunate, because the issue was tremendously impacting so many people, and their lives were hung in the balance, and many people showed up at this meeting, and I would rather that had Paul Lee chosen to make sure that everyone who arrived there got a chance to get their say in. And that didn't happen. This was Celia Scott's last meeting.
Celia Scott is both, as I said before, a council member and a long-term 6-year board member of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless.
And an attorney, yes.
Yeah, she said she definitely was reacting very much to the Dan Huckins lawsuit suggestion.
Yeah, interestingly enough, her reactions were not
to turn to Paul Merceau and Daryl Darling and say, how could you close the shelter without conferring with the rest of us? How could you break your word? What are we going to do now? It was rather, oh, Dan, we didn't know about this, so you really can't blame us.
Well, there's a lot of truth in that, and that came out earlier in the meeting, in the part that was not on that tape, where Paul Merceau stood up and basically announced that, contrary to what some things had been printed in the Sentinel, that the decision to close the campground had been his and Rotkin's alone. The two of them had gotten together after the very first major storm and decided, without consulting any other CCH members, to close the campground. This was a big surprise to a lot of people, CCH members, at that meeting, including Paul Lee himself.
You, I think, are being naive, Becky. I don't think it was a surprise to Paul Lee at all. I think that if Paul Lee told you that it was the Citizens Committee that, or if it was the city that closed the campground, he was simply replicating the false statements that he made, repeating the false statements he made back 5 years ago when there was a similar situation. In 1991, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless did pretty much the same thing. They closed their campground 15 days early, claiming that it was the city and the police who are forcing them to do it. But they're the ones who have written a letter to the police department saying, we want you to remove people on pain of trespass from our property. And with that letter on file, they then call in the police and ask that those removals happen. So, you know, your idea that somehow Lee was bamboozled or ill-informed, I think is just the sheerest naivete.
Well, he was either unaware of the situation or he out and out lied to me. I called him earlier in the day and talked to him and about who had made the decision to close the campground, and he told me that it wasn't CCH at all, that it was the city of Santa Cruz, Mike Rotkin and Scott Kennedy specifically, who had decided to shut down the campground, claiming it was a health hazard. And
it had been closed down in the spring, which I tried to have it closed down in the spring.
Now, a dissident view is heard from the vicious Mushroomic, a friend of Daryl Darling.
Yeah, let's talk about the...
Yeah, a friend of Daryl Darling. So we'd like to say that Daryl Darling has been the only one coming back out there, except for the people who want to help the refugees, and that he's the only one showing up. And I'd like to thank Daryl for trying and being there, and I'm sorry that a lot of people yell and scream at you, but I think when it got back down to in the spring when we got there for 3 months in the back 40 with no water, no hot water, toilets overflowing, I think I should have called OSHA then. I think it's my problem and my fault for not doing that ahead of time because I know about OSHA.
Well, that's interesting, Mushroomic, and I can commend your concerns. As far as Daryl Darling's appearing at the campground and running around schmoozing everybody to death, I have no particular word for that except a sense of nausea and distaste. I mean, he did this for weeks. He met with us at the so-called duck pond meetings, making his commitments, making his statements, and you might say that perhaps he felt events overtook him. He had to go with Paul Merceau in some sort of brotherly loyalty to his fellow employee on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. But for a guy who gets paid $20 an hour, as I understand Daryl Darling does, and for somebody who's made a commitment to people who don't have 1/100th the wealth he does or the resources to shelter themselves, I have no sympathy at all for Daryl Darling. I'm sorry. I just don't. And I think that, you know, they should fire these guys as negotiators, at least, if not as administrators, and give us somebody that will give us some straight talk, because they're obviously either unable or unwilling to keep their word. That's what happened with them. As far as this business about the campground being unsanitary,
you know, it's not an OSHA standard campground, no question about it. But is it more unsanitary for people to run around illegally outside getting $168 tickets and having no legal place to be? My answer was that people did the best they could with what they had, and that this final decision to close it down had nothing to do with whether it was sanitary or unsanitary. It had to do, because it hadn't, its condition had not altered. In fact, it had improved. They had, now they had access to running water, they had access to showers, day center opened, you know, all that stuff opened next door to the open air shelter. Now what they had was they had a desire to make sure there was not a lot of protest and resistance to Community House, the 10 trailer project, which they're going to try to roll right through City Council at the second, on the second Tuesday. It's coming up, by the way, a week from tomorrow. And they're also going to try to roll it past the Planning Commission on January 25th or 26th when their hearing is. And more on that specifically and hopefully accurately as time goes on. Becky, do you want to say something here?
Regarding the condition of the campground, some of the blame for the lack of quality or sanitary or healthy conditions in the campground falls rightly on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. For instance, there were 3 porta potties. According to these companies that rent these, you're supposed to have 1 porta potty for every 15 persons. It doesn't take a math genius to know that 3 porta potties are not going to serve 200 people.
So when I brought Cab down with a camera and they saw that there was no water, they put a back sink in, they brought an extra porta potty in. Well, then we had 4. Well, that if you put 4 times 15, you still don't
you
have
get
even
60.
Close. Right, exactly. I think there's still some. I just looked downtown and there's porta potties all over the place, you know, and they're locked up. You know, it's like somebody can afford to do all this, but afford it for us, I guess not.
It's the same story that was angrily brought out at the meeting, the question of tents. There's part of this, most of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless Board meeting you don't hear because it was 2 hours long. You heard the last 10 or 15 minutes. But some members said, look, if you can build, if the downtown earthquake can be emergency enough for them to be these huge modular tents for businesses, then why the hell can't you manage a few such similar tents for people who are essentially in an emergency shelter situation? And of course, there was, as I recall, no response whatsoever of any significance from the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. There's a difference of standard here. You know, they like to pretend they're doing a good job or they're trying real hard. And Rotkin, our mayor, does exactly the same thing. But he can spend thousands of dollars on relocating 47 campers when he can't use the same money to fix up an area that could be used for 2 or 3 times that number of people and needs to be open for there to be a legal place for people to sleep at night, for those who are not adept at cop car dodging.
Recall. I think it's recall time.
Well, short of that, in light of the fact that there is a camping ban in the city of Santa Cruz, and now the only legal place for people to sleep has been closed, it seems reasonable and necessary for the city council to extend a moratorium on camping bans until a new campground opens. Otherwise, we're back in a situation where people are sleeping in doorways, sleeping under bridges, pushing shopping carts around town with their belongings because they have no place to store them. They're getting camping tickets, and some of them, after they gather a sufficient number of camping tickets, wind up in jail for the crime of sleeping outdoors. And when they're in jail, this costs the taxpayers a great deal more than minimal services if we had just had an open-air shelter, which, as Celia Scott said earlier on at the CCH meeting, a campground is a very inexpensive way of providing services for homeless people if you look on a per capita basis.
Go ahead, Carl.
Which is, I think, is precisely what the city is trying to convince people of, is that, let me rephrase that, is that camping is, to them, is just not a solution to homelessness, and they really, when they have the power, they're not going to care what people's lives are about. It just seems to me that putting homeless people inside is the main issue, and to get money from HUD or other agencies that are donating money, such as that guy that was there that day, that consultant, Sergey. It seems to
poverty camp from up north, I might add.
That no matter...
chunk it.
If it's less expensive or not, it doesn't seem to matter to them. It just seems that they want to convince people that sleeping outside is wrong. More on that.
Yeah, and I think Mushroomy got a comment to make about Mayor Rotkin, who you may remember. We called him in our last show here on Friday, and four campers, Billy, Greg, Dan, and some other folks here, talked to Rotkin and I asked him, look, how about opening up, what if the Citizens Committee tomorrow were to open up the open-air shelter again? Because, after all, it has operated for a year and a half without permits and in the somewhat less than optimum health situation it's been in. I mean, and also you pointed out that the city council has not voted to give anybody negotiating power, so you can't really close it down, and the council can't really close it down until it has another meeting. And certainly it's in a shelter crisis. You voted a shelter crisis in November, so how about if they open it up, or somebody else, say Lighthouse Field were open up, or someplace up near the homeless garden project? And what was Rodkin's response, Mushroomic?
I think it was more like no matter where they put the homeless here in town, I'm not going to stand for it, he said, and that they can't do that.
Get out of town. Get out of my neighborhood. Not in my backyard. These aren't phrases that come sweetly to the image of RoboCop Mike Rotkin, our new mayor. These don't sound like a man who calls himself a socialist and teaches a community studies course up at the University of California. But you must judge an individual by the deeds they do and by what, in fact, policy statements they have ultimately come to stand behind. And Rotkin has come to mean, in the last two or three weeks, get out of town, campers. Go into the shelters that are open, even though there's insufficient number and they can't help you if you have pets, and, or if you're in couples, or if you have certain late night jobs, you can't get in there. Doesn't matter. We aren't going to give a damn beyond that. And if somebody else opens up a campground, well, it's not going to happen until the lengthy permit process is gone through. In essence, it's an emergency, yeah, but it's not our emergency. Our emergency is to get you guys out of here. That's our emergency. So I'm afraid that that's the situation.
I think that Mike Rotkin and Councilman Scott Kennedy have sort of caved into the anti-homeless sentiment that we've been seeing dotting the pages of our Sentinel, and words coming out of the mouths of certain supervisors.
And let's not forget Celia Scott.
Well, I'm speaking specifically about Scott Kennedy and Mike Rotkin, that in the past they have made comments that seem more favorable towards the needs of homeless people, but what they've been saying lately sounds like that they're fanning the flames of anti-homeless sentiment, that homeless people are homeless because they're somehow deficient, that if we provide services for homeless people, then we'll just become a magnet for homeless people across the nation. This is a myth, and... is for homeless people. So what? Another person gets a place to sleep and food to eat? That doesn't seem like a bad thing to me.
And Mike, where did you come from? New York? Well.
Yeah, I agree with Becky that it to me seems like it's a method of swaying public sentiment in propagandizing the notion of homelessness. That it is just a morally abhorrent thing to have and to help them other than put them inside and control how they live make them components of a larger system with God knows or whoever knows how many rules they have, such as in HUD housing, all the kinds of ways to control your lifestyle. It's just easier to get rid of this problem right now by telling the public that it's strange to think of wanting to live outside. It's not the way to be, and to get people to believe that, and to look at homeless people in such a dark way. They're never going to want to see homeless people. They just are going to say, get out of my face, I don't want to see you, be inside or else you're not worth my time. It's easier to get rid of an immediate problem by making everything wrong and horrible and not doing anything about it.
I'd like to mention that downtown, most of the panhandlers that are down there aren't a part of the back 40 of their ISSP shelter, that they are just alcoholics and they do sleep under the bridges, and that maybe that's created a problem for this whole town. I don't know, but to sweep them under, send them out, well, go ahead, go buy them some bus tickets and send them somewhere. But don't pick on the people here. I've never panhandled in this town. I'm in this town now for a year, and I'll tell you what, I was told here to come here 25 years ago because this was a progressive town. All I see is digression. I've seen the worst I've ever seen.
And you are on the air with the Mushroomic, Becky Johnson of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, Coral Broom, whose last name I never remember, and of course the infamous bathrobe spear Robert Norris. We have an incoming phone call here. Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hello. Happy New Year.
Oh, this sounds like Just Man Jim Costner.
I just wanted to congratulate you on a really good show.
Well, thank you.
And I wanted to know if I could make a statement in support of the homeless people.
Sure, you can.
I think it's, I'm sick, so my articulation is a little bit difficult, but I think it's incredible that a Marxist, a socialist, the mayor, Mike Rodkin, I don't know what Marx he's been reading or what he's been studying, but the man needs to be taught about compassion and understanding. And as far as Scott Kennedy, who is a supposedly great peace advocate, it's just the epitome of hypocrisy. In terms of the homeless people, all people, whether you have a house or not, are human beings. Everybody needs shelter. Everybody needs food. Everybody needs respect. Everybody needs love. And it seems to me that the city council are doing what city councils all throughout the country are doing, and that's spreading a whole wave of anti-homeless hysteria aligned with the merchants, aligned with the upper echelons of the power structure that are creating a whole wave trying to turn the middle class people against the homeless people and trying to divide the homeless people themselves, the so-called good homeless people, which are the homeless people who don't resist, don't speak out, don't go against the status quo, against the homeless people who will resist and who do have strong feelings of going against the status quo. And I just want to say one last thing. I heard, I don't know what the man's name was, made a comment about how the
Mushroomic,
the alcoholic panhandlers, perhaps they are causing problems. The problem isn't alcoholic panhandlers. Panhandling isn't a crime. It's not a crime. To ask somebody for quarter, that's not a problem. Alcoholism is a problem, but that's not a problem that needs to be dealt with by the law. Disease.
I completely agree with you. And I said it from a place of what they think, not how I think.
Okay.
I mean, this is what they're trying to do to everybody and who they're picking on and why. And I think it's the whole town in a whole looking at it, yes. And you know what? Acupuncture has now found the cure for it. So it is curable through acupuncture.
Yep, I agree with you. And I think that's part of how the power structure retains its power is by keeping us divided. So I'm just really concerned about when I hear fellow people start looking at other people in different ways, that we all are people and we all need to stick together and stand together, and that's really the only hope and the only solution to solve these problems, is that more and more of us coming together and seeing each other as equals, as
good
fellow
point.
People.
Good point.
And happy New Year to all of you.
From us all the way to the mayor. Thank you.
All right.
back.
Don't go yet, Jim. I have a question for you.
What's that?
Were you downtown last night?
No, I've been sick for 6 days, bedridden, unfortunately.
Well, I'm going to invite anyone who's been listening. I'm sorry you've been sick, big guy. I get some more sleep. To call in and to tell us what they saw happening last night in terms of any differential treatment between poor people and rich people on the mall, because I don't know if you were listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz last night, but Skidmark's Bob Duran was doing a show in which he was apparently discovering that poor drunks were being immediately arrested and taken away, and the rich tipsy folks were not suffering that kind of treatment. So I'm kind of curious if that's true, and I'd like to get some reports from all you listeners out there. And I want to thank you, Jim, for calling in. Anything more you want to say?
I listened to Bob's show last night. That was a great show. And I just want to say one last thing is that it's to be expected. It's not right. It's to be expected, though, that this country and this whole system is in a crisis. And we see historically that what happens is that they always need scapegoats. I think that we should be very concerned about this. People have a hard time understanding the depth of how evil this power structure is. But people should know. And in terms of the homeless people, what they fight of today, which is just incredible oppressive conditions, is only going to become more severe under the system. And so people should be able to get prepared for that.
Well, thank you, Jim.
Uh-huh. Take care.
All right.
And that was Just Man Jim Costner, who has his own show on the air. I think it's usually before my show on, is it Fridays? I think it's Fridays, 9 o'clock in the morning. Maybe it's Mondays. In any case, it's you can stay tuned, tune in an hour early on both those days, and then stay tuned for my show, and you'll be able to walk away a full and realized human being.
I would greatly appreciate Jim's comments. There is no them. These arguments seem to always come down to us and them. There is no them. It's all us. There are no throwaways. Each person is valuable and precious, and we are responsible for the people that we see in our path. And Santa Cruz needs to get turned around on this issue. Obviously, our leaders are not leading us in the right direction. So citizens who understand this need to come together and educate our leaders and point them in the right direction. This anti-homeless sentiment cannot continue to exist. It must be met. It must be met with reason. It must be met with the leaders or the prominent citizens need to come forward and protest this situation.
We need to organize too. I think though the New Brighton Beach campers have got apparently a temporary solution through an $800 donation, and that's nice. It's a way, of course, of taking the city council and the citizens committee for the homeless and perhaps all of us off the hook, because the overwhelming majority of homeless people who are now outside and now have only 56 church spaces and 150 armory spaces at max, if they can go indoors, they are to be ignored. They will continue to be busted under the sleeping ban. I was getting reports last night, people busted under the sleeping ban on the mall, taking reports on New Year's Eve. If you want to organize, however, to fight that kind of discrimination, and the discrimination that is its twin brother downtown, the hostility and outright exclusionary policies by merchants such as Stuart Martin of the ID building, such as Kevin and his Stuart over at the Java House Cafe, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, an organization to which I belong, concerned with civil rights for the poor, 423-4833. You can also, of course, give a call to this show, 427-3772. Our lines are indeed open, and we could use some of your lines. It would be very nice. You know, let's get some one-liners in here, maybe some Al, don't call in, some other voices than my own. And in order to do that, I promised you, perhaps I threatened you, with Jane Immler's comments. Well, here comes Jane, whether you like her or not, and it's going to give the rest of us a break and a chance to engage in a little early morning orgasmic activity.
Okay, we're still on the phone to Jane Immler. It's December 22nd, and it's about 8:15 in the morning. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Rob.
And we may have cut you off there. You were saying that the situation for campers may not be... may not be such a good one that they're going to find. They're going to find on January 1st. They may find themselves at the business end of a flashlight or something.
Most likely. Now, unless you know, Mike Rotkin gave him some other type of suggestion about what was going to happen come January 1. Did he?
No.
He did not.
No. Not that I know of. I mean,
who's picking up the bill for this? Is the city?
City.
The city is.
That's my understanding. I think it's $1,500 is what they say. We calculated it to be somewhat higher, but it's hard to say.
I wonder why they didn't put them up in on that part, one of the state parks up there off of Graham Hill Road. That would have been much closer to Santa Cruz. Maybe that's obviously the reason.
Perhaps, although I don't know. It may have been logistics. You know, you have an opportunity to call into the show. You might be interested in trying to call and talk to Mike Rutkin and ask a few of these questions directly.
Well.
And that is between 10 and 11 at least, I'm pretty sure. And if he keeps his original deal, then it'll be between 10 and 12 today.
Well, I would like to do that. Unfortunately, I'm going to be at a concert that my grandson's going to be participating in.
Oh, dear.
So,
bummer in the summer.
What happens to one of the, you know, when you're grandparents, you have to...
Yes, indeed.
But so anyway, so you've got campers up in New Brighton Beach. You got the media and the politics, the politicos hollering about them being dumped up there.
What should they do? And what should people in the community and other homeless people do to confront with this situation? We have a situation where there's an armory which we are assured by a partner named Laura Palmer, so as I call him, who's the head of the open air shelter program. 150 spaces in the armory and 56 odd spaces in the church. And he's also told me, sort of off the cuff, that if they want to go to the Watsonville Armory, there's another 100 odd spaces there. So,
well,
can anybody complain? I mean,
well, is there any? Has anybody given any consideration to loosening any of the rules around the armory situation, where people could bring pets, or they could put up dog houses, or they could let people put their tents? I mean, that's De La Vie. Isn't the armory up there by De La Vie Park?
I think it is, actually.
Why didn't they just move the whole thing up there? I mean, that way people would have access to the armory. They could still put their tents out. I mean, that seems like it makes a lot more sense, and it'd be a lot cheaper, actually. It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense why they shipped them out to New Brighton Beach. How did the people get out there?
They sent city buses for them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they shipped them out with city buses, and it has been a very, very positive response from a lot of individuals in the community, bringing them firewood and food and tents and clothes and so forth. Not everybody is grinchish about homeless people out at New Brighton Beach. And the homeless people like to point out that they're not on welfare, that they're all SSI, they're all Social Security people. And some of them are disabled, no doubt, SSI perhaps, but they're of a different category than those other poor people, for heaven's sake.
Oh, good.
I want to make sure they're be part of the more deserving poor.
Right.
I find it rather contemptible, this attempt to separate homeless people and treat one group as an elite and another group, and it gets to, you know, scamper for the bridges and so forth. But indeed, the campers that were sent out there are, you know, didn't have much choice. They were told their dogs were going to be, you know, they either had to go into the armory without their dogs or face the camping ban. And Rotkin showed no disposition to ameliorate the camping ban or make any provisions for the winter.
for them other than this rather, to my mind, grandiose and temporary fix. But again, you know, it seems to have generated its own publicity and its own momentum, and as an old-time activist, what would you be doing if you were in Santa Cruz?
Well, that's a good question, because this is a very unique situation in that, you know, they took them out of the city of Santa Cruz and essentially dumped them out there. But now you're also saying that there is some positive response coming from the community to people that have been, you know, placed out there.
Now, they can't stay past 2 weeks. That's the regulation.
Right, right. So what are the campers out there thinking? I mean, have you talked with them? Do you know what they're thinking?
Well, the campers I've talked to some of them, and some of them who gravitate into town are, you know, really interested in the broader rights of homeless people and in demonstrations to kind of bring these rights to the fore in the Christmas season. And others really feel that they have, you know, they should work on their own needs and concerns, and they don't want to, you know, upset the apple cart. And they kind of made a deal. Part of the deal with Paul Mercer, the head of the open air shelter, was that they would not come back to the property. Although, in my mind, this deal has no force because it was made under duress.
Mm-hmm.
And it was made in violation of an agreement that Mercer himself, on tape twice, affirmed, which I played in my last radio show, Broadsides, Patrick Spears, Broadsides. Nonetheless, they feel it's binding. They feel they're honor-bound, apparently some of them, to, you know, not, for example, to return to that site, which is, in fact, vacant. You know, there are all kinds of wooden pallets sitting there waiting to be used. That it's right next to the homeless services. It may be wretched. It may be you've considered it and described it as toxic. But at least it's available, and it's not being used, and it's next to food and showers and plumbing and other services. So there is that to be said for it. And it won't even be the subject of consideration for building until February, because the community house hearing doesn't happen until January 25th or so.
Mm-hmm.
That community house, of course, is the trailers project, the, I don't know whether it's 800,000 to 1.3 million, I've heard different figures. Anyway, it's way up there. It's around $1 million to transport donated trailers from Stanford and set them up and blacktop the area for 48 people to be able to use it at a cost of $200 to $600 a month. Although Daryl Darling has told some of the campers who objected to this whole idea that perhaps they could get in free if they were lucky.
No. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, is there any possibility that
Daryl Darling is the head of community house project.
Has anybody addressed to Mike Rodkin the possibility of what it would take to go back to the River Street site after Christmas?
I have. And of course, I can raise that issue about going back to River Street after New Year's.
With some clean porta potties and, if need be, some straw.
December 22nd, later in the day, here's an interview with a man on the street who...
But that was Jane Emmer we were listening to, and we are going to be actually going into another segment of the show in a moment after a few comments from some of our panelists here. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Call-in number, and it's open, is 427-3772. You are on the air with Becky Johnson, Cora Breen, Mishrimek, and Uncle Robert Norris. The issue is how many homeless can you hide under a bridge, or how many homeless can you dump off the coast? How many homeless can you get out of town, and how many homeless can you ignore? A question the city council does not quite write. How many homeless can you cram into a community house trailer? Not too many. Anyway, here's Becky Johnson talking about another issue, which probably is going to come up on her show tomorrow, Tuesday. She has a community perspective show, which her guest will be.
Candidate for Board of Supervisors, Paul Elric. And actually, I went out to the New Brighton campground on Saturday the 30th and interviewed several of the campers and some of the community members that came down. While we were there, Paul Elric showed up. And he listened to many of the campers, and we had discussion. And when many of the campers expressed their frustration
over there that they were very willing to do work in exchange for a place to stay, and that they had been shut down on every suggestion that they had put forth. Paul Ellerick considered it, and he said, well, why don't we make an arrangement about the Porter Cessnon property? This is 66 acres of open space that was recently acquired. The community at large said that they very much wanted to keep this land as open space and not develop it. However, open space does require some sort of maintenance, and Scotch Broom is getting technical problems here.
We're experiencing technical difficulties.
Ah, that's better. What happened with so Paul Ellerick suggested that we strike some sort of deal to have the homeless people move on to the Porter Cessnon property in exchange for maintenance, removing weeds and brush and trimming trees, cleaning up litter, all the sorts of things that the county has no money itself to do. So this could be a win-win situation, and I'm very encouraged to hear leaders in our community come forth with such common sense solutions to a situation that requires not only our compassion but our good sense.
Yeah, it's too bad that bureaucrats in power, like Catherine Byers, who is still a council member, can't do better than simply saying that she thinks Mike had a wonderful idea by moving everybody out to Brighton Beach. That's I saw her last night during the New Year's festivities, and we won't criticize her for not taking my flyers. I mean, after all, she's read plenty of them, and she knows my position, but she is indeed on the board, on the, I should say, city council, and has power to speak out, if nothing else, to say, I do feel a deal was made with the campers. This is wrong. I mean, that kind of a voice in our community, I think, would have some significant impact. It might even produce an emergency meeting of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless Board to say, you made a contract, sorry, you got to keep it. Those campers may not be interested and probably aren't interested in coming back to the area, but they're there are other people who do need a place to stay at night. There are plenty of other people who need to use that property, and it's available. It should be available for use. So I just wish that the politicians would take their cue from Paul, what's his name?
Paul Ellerick.
Paul Ellerick. Paul, right on, Paul.
And he's running against Supervisor Walt Simons, who has come out with some of the most horrendous anti-homeless statements we've seen in the past month. Things that remind us of the Third Reich. Hitler was very down on homeless people, too.
As he should be. After all, let's not get into that. But remember that you out there in the audience who are sitting around diddling your toes, watching television and picking your noses, or whatever you're doing, you have a...
Yeah, butter up your audience there,
I'm
Robert.
I'm trying to treat you nice. Wait till I'll bring on the hard cop in just a minute. You have an opportunity to use your telephone, if you have a telephone, and give a call to City Hall. And City Hall is 429-3550, and they're on all the time. That is to say, their phone lines are on all the time. They haven't been on for years, actually, but the phone lines are available. They'll record your calls. They will call you back and give you a fine cock and bull story, and it would be very amusing for you to hear. So give a call to your city council person and tell her or him that you want city council to enforce its emergency shelter ordinance, that you want city council members individually to speak out against a betrayal of the homeless, particularly when it's done by a group that is funded with city council money and that is also asking for more money from city council on the second Tuesday of this month. City council meeting at 3:30. Be there, by the way. I think that's January 8th, something like that. We have been running around the open-air shelter issue for a long time. Some of the campers out at the New Brighton Beach, the River Street refugees, will probably tell us, hey, that's old news. We don't care about that campground. Heck with it. We have one here who says it's a toxic dump, agreeing with Jane Himmler, apparently, the other activist who you just heard a few moments ago on tape. Fact is, however, that that's the only spot right now where there is any reasonable prospect of pressuring people to open up territory in the next month or 2 months, or even, I would say, 3 or 4 months. That's my estimation, unless we have some revolution in town and Mushroomick becomes mayor. Mayor Mushroomick sounds good, but frankly, I don't see it happening at the moment. Maybe Czar Mushroomick or Commissar, but no. None of that sounds very good. Let's leave this whole exciting issue of the open-air shelter for a moment, but not, of course, forever. And if you want to mention it on the phone lines are open at 427-3772. We want to turn to some other issues, at least I do. There is the issue of discrimination downtown. And Mushroomick has had some problems regarding bicycles, have you not, Mushroomick?
Oh, yes, I have.
Now, tell us about that.
Well, it seems to me when I went to buy a bicycle locker that they said you can't have anything in it. Well, I figured, well, you know, in the weather here in Santa Cruz, that we have to have a sweater once in a while in your locker, and, well, you got a bicycle, you should have some tools because you're pretty far away from wherever I live. And it seems to me I had a little box of change, and it was like that was too much in a bicycle locker that, you know, the bicycle fits in.
So what happened was, what did the authorities do to you here?
So they said that I cannot stay with the bicycle lockers, and that they are kicking me out.
So they were telling you that your rental of a bicycle locker is now no longer allowed.
Right, because I had 4 or 5 things in the locker, and there's plenty of room for a bicycle in there.
And so, how long have you been running this locker before?
Since March, I believe.
And this is one of the lockers that's in the lot, right outside the parking lot where the Asian Rose is, across
right,
from Cafe
right.
Denny.
It seems that because there are homeless there and they found out that I'm homeless, they didn't want me around.
Well, they don't want to encourage homelessness. After all, you might crawl into the bicycle locker and, dare I say it, try to sleep legally.
Oh, no.
No
sleeping.
No sleeping.
Got to keep those disciplines in mind.
Indiscriminately open these lockers at any intervals or what?
If they happen to drive by and see somebody with too much stuff in there, yeah, they'll have them open or throw them out right there. They just happen to come up at a time to grease the lockers and
so
make them
your locker. They opened your locker without a search warrant, is that what you're saying?
Well, they did put something in the mail. By the time I got my mail, it was already open. Plus, I haven't had a key because I keep losing my keys. Being homeless, I don't have a place to keep things safe.
Well, I remember a year ago when I was doing demonstrations with Jack Lye John Hamilton, or Johnny Dredd, as he's now known to listeners of Free Radio Santa Cruz. We were picketing in front of the ID building and the bookshop Santa Cruz against their anti-homeless laws downtown, which are, of course, still the rule, unfortunately. And John wanted to get himself a bicycle locker, but eventually I think he may have decided not to because of the rather nasty attitude towards city officials that if anything, you know, so much as a popsicle stick other than a bicycle was found in that locker, he would be strung up by his testes at high noon. Let's say, rather, he would not be allowed to use the locker. So I remember this rather nasty anti-homeless approach coming out as early as a year ago.
So I'm wondering which Nazi is over there running the place.
He's in the Winston Churchill Nazis, eh? Well, I think to call Jim Lang, or Liebensraum Lang, as I've called him in the past, who's the head of the Parks and Rec Department, a Nazi, or a Nazi, as we Americans say, is, certainly poetic license. But it is true that he, for example, made sure through his testimony that when Brian Koepke, Bubba Brian, who's on the board of directors of the Homeless Community Resource Center, tried to extend showers for an hour so that homeless people could have 1 hour of showers a week, not a day, not a minute, but a week, and this is when there were no showers for homeless people back in 1989, it was Jim Lang who said, no, we couldn't allow Harvey West showers to be open to the homeless for 1 hour a week. When individuals wanted to, merchants wanted to remove benches from the downtown to prohibit homeless and other poor people from lingering in front of their business, it was Jim Lang who had those benches removed without a public hearing. Jim is a longtime liberal. That's all I can say for him.
I think the bomb is being dropped, and I think the collateral damage is here. And I think to walk by a statue over a Hiroshima bomb is one thing, but to see the people in your own streets and your own collateral damage, what do you need a statue for?
Speaking of which, the issue was raised this summer, and it's still going to be relevant. The Scope Park, you may remember it, Scribner Park, the little park area with the big mural across from the town clock, which has a bench in it. It's right next to what used to be Zoccoli's Pasta House, I believe. It was... The city tried to privatize that and give it away to the Garage Grill in 1989. We fought that successfully, interestingly enough. We were kind of on the march in 1989. That was the same year we got the food programs legalized after they arrested dozens of us for serving illegal food at the town clock.
Not serving food.
Oh, yes. I got to admit it. I did. I ladled that rice. I gave those bagels. Oh, God, I did it.
It's a criminal activity. Oh, it's frightening.
It is. But right now, this year, there is a new move to privatize Scope Park, to give it away, to lease it off, to make it private rather than public space. We saw this happening all through the last 2 years as merchants have been able to decree which musicians can play in front of their coffee houses and which can't. It's actually technically illegal for anyone to perform in front of a open-air cafe. And, of course, you see it happening all the time. But just let Skidmark's Bob or Phil Free pull out their guitar and guess what's going to happen. It's a discriminatory and discouraging situation. All the more reason for us to stand up and say no thank you. And that is what I'm encouraging people to do with respect to the ID building, which is
here,
the
here.
Indeed. And there. Did you want to say something, Coral? You look like you're moving into the mic there. No?
All right. You invited me, I will.
Of course. Go ahead.
We just have to say that we can't take this anymore in some fashion, whether you can write better, whether you can speak on the phone better, whatever your talent is, or do art, do music, somehow just show where you stand, because it just is... This is emotional for me, and I really, it's hard for me to talk, but to just see this constant hypocrisy when I get the feeling that we're invited by the city council to express ourselves, and we're told that it's not that us and them exactly, it's just the hypocrisy that we are all a part of them. Is what is very intimidating, because if you do go and wait through all the meetings and wait for your turn and all this, it's very slow, it's very methodical, it eliminates a lot of people who don't have the patience and the fortitude to just keep at these issues. And what I was hearing is, for example, about playing music, that the district attorney's office had been contacted about Bob's playing on the mall, but they weren't even interested in pressing charges. So a lot of these things that they do are just threats which aren't carried out. They give the tickets out, they don't act on them, nothing's really done about them, so it's sort of more like threat tactics.
Harassment, actually, yeah.
Harassment, we're going to have to expect that. I mean, some people will be put in jail for a few hours or overnight, but all these things just, they serve to eliminate people who won't stick up for what they believe in, and it just kind of keeps everybody in line.
It's easier, I think, for us to stick up for things together, and It's a stick-up on the homeless rights here, and Stuart Martin is the big stick-up man, unfortunately, at the ID building. I have a flyer here that I recently reissued. It's called Stuart Martin, Still Unwanted. It's actually kind of a parody of a wanted poster. And I'm going to read a little bit of this flyer, and then I'm going to play an interview I had with some of Martin's most recent victims, actually one of his most recent victims, and a witness to that victimization. Here first is the flyer. Stuart Martin works at the Integram Design, the ID building, 1515 Pacific Avenue, still unwanted. What is he unwanted for? He's unwanted for assault and battery against refuse and resist worker David Dumars, February 1994. What's that about? Martin assaulted Dumars in front of many witnesses in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz across the street from the ID building, owned by Martin's mother, Nana. Dumars was drawing public attention to police arresting peaceful homeless protesters up the street who were part of the World Peace Vigil in mid-February 1994. Martin then called the police and accused Dumars of assaulting him. Dumars was subsequently maced at a distance of 6 inches by Sergeant Alufi. In October 1994, jurors told public defender John Thornton that Martin lied. Both the DA and the judge agreed to dismiss the assault charge, which was the original bone of contention. Dumars is still appealing the other charges. What else is Stuart Martin wanted for? Unwanted for leading a campaign of harassment and intimidation against civil rights activists in a campaign to decriminalize poverty downtown. That's April through November of 1994, and apparently it hasn't stopped. In April, Martin called police to remove a legal political table staffed by Huff activist John Hamilton. Police found Martin's complaint groundless, but his campaign of harassment intensified. When tabling against the downtown ordinances resumed, Martin repeated his well-honed technique of false police calls for blocking the sidewalk. Police agreed with activists that Martin's complaints were groundless. Another charge against Martin, interfering with political tablers and innocent spectators as part of the Downtown Merchant Association's Privatize the Mall agenda, May of 1994. So the specifics, in May, two women workers for single-payer health care who were signing up supporters in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz were accosted by Martin, who demanded they leave. Martin also approached another woman who was completely uninvolved and accused her of being part of, quote, the group of demonstrators, insisting she leave the public area in front of the bookshop. Another charge against Martin, filing a false police report against local activist Robert Nurse to stop the boycott bigotry campaign, May 1994. The details. In a homeless United for Friendship and Freedom boycott protesting bookshop Santa Cruz owner Neil Coonerty's anti-poor downtown ordinances, May 29, 1994, Martin falsely accused Norris of calling him, quote, a Nazi and a follower of Adolf Hitler, unquote. Norris was twice arrested and taken to court 5 times before Judge Kelsey insisted the charges be dismissed for insufficient evidence in mid-October. The selective boycott against merchants who support sit-near-a-store-go-to-jail laws, which continue, by the way, also includes Atlanta's Fantasy World, Game-A-Lot, Artisans, Cat and Canary, Bookshop Santa Cruz, and Staff of Life. In other words, don't patronize those stores. Or if you do, go in and tell them that you're about to stop unless they change their support for sit-near-a-shop-go-to-jail laws. Another charge against Stuart Martin, or another, I believe, verified accusation, harassing and battering an elderly downtown resident, June 1994. And the details. Martin reportedly accosted, abused, interrogated, and blocked the path of Reggie Kosica, an elderly local resident, near a dumpster back of the ID building with demands to know what he was doing there. Kosica said he was throwing away a piece of litter. Attorneys report the two filed charges of battery against each other. Kosica later went to the hospital with heart problems. I actually never interviewed Kosica, but I got this information from attorneys involved. Challenging food activist Chris Brosnan to fight, then calling police to arrest him, July 1994. The specifics. Brazda entered Martin's shop to peacefully discuss with him Martin's actions against Norris and reported Martin threatened him and invited him to, quote, step outside to settle matters. Brazda was subsequently convicted of battery for spilling coffee on Martin. I don't know how strong that one is, but I read it for the record. Another charge, attacking street musicians for protest music with calculated disturbing the peace charges. October 1994, and we might even say October 1995. They did this a year later, although I don't think Martin was involved this year in those particular charges. But by 1994, he was. On October 19th, Martin orchestrated a felony complaint of making terrorist threats, quote-unquote, against Skidmark's Bob Duran of the Just Kidding Band, who was singing in front of a bookshop Santa Cruz. As in the case with Norris, police neither informed nor warned Bob of any violation at the time. Yet within 2 weeks, Bob was arrested and jailed on two counts of disturbing the peace. Police have continued to harass Bob with new such charges, one in early December 95 in front of Woolworths. Radical singer Phil Free has also been twice charged with disturbing the peace for the content of politically pointed songs like Hospitality Nazis. Free, however, was not accused by Martin in any of these instances. Another charge, conspiring to deprive ordinary Santa Cruzans of their rights to assemble, petition, and peacefully use public spaces downtown, November 1994. On October 18th, 1994, Martin and bookshop Santa Cruz owner Neil Coonerty approached Juan Santos, who was distributing Yes on Air literature in front of Georgiana's Cafe and giving out political pins. Coonerty demanded Santos leave or he would be arrested under the new downtown ordinance 9413, municipal code 5.43.020E, the Coonerty Cafe Law, which makes peaceful tabling illegal in front of open-air cafes. And now we get down to the most basic and most recent and most egregious episode, really, discriminating against homeless people through them maligning, expelling, and assaulting them. Let's get the specifics on this. I actually wrote only a very small description of it, but you're going to hear a much larger description in the tape that is to be played subsequent to my reading of this flyer. On December 22nd, 1995, that's about a week and a half ago, Housing Now activist Linda LeMaster, or Lighthouse Linda as I call her, reported that Martin shoved a homeless panhandler down the street half a block away from his store. The panhandler reported that when he tried to buy an item in Martin's ID building, he was called a thief, evicted, and told all homeless people are thieves. His girlfriend was given similar treatment later. When the man suggested police be called, Martin smirked, "Who do you think they'll believe?" So that's the man we're talking about, Stuart Martin, the manager of the ID building. He's a rather clean-cut looking guy with a thin mustache, just walk into the ID building and ask to talk to him. I'm sure that he'd be happy to respond to these charges. Let's see if he does. And now let's hear a little bit of what this is all about in an interview on December 22nd. Actually, we can wait on that for a moment because I think Mishrenik has a comment or two.
Yeah, back earlier this year when there was a table out in front of Martin's place, I found out who Martin was. Well, after Daryl across the street was thrown out, the man who had the bamboo rickshaw and made flutes in the streets, well, he said he didn't even want to contest it, so he left when Martin crossed the street to tell him. But it seemed to me and Martin got eye to eye to say, hey, this ain't right. So one day I was crossing the street, catty corner from where he is, and he comes out in the truck and tries to run me over. And I got a chance to see how Martin really is. Well, Martin, I've let you go down the street a few times, and everybody knows that I've stopped 34 fights, but I've also gone and gotten the bad guys. And if you're going to be a bad guy, watch out. Mushroom mix around.
Another case to add to the Martin dossier, apparently. You want to say something, Daddy?
You've invited him here to answer these charges?
He refuses to talk to me on the phone, but I suggested that a mediator give him a call, as well as calling the Downtown Association and telling them that the boycott may well be in the offing. There is a boycott in my mind against the ID building, but it's rather poorly publicized, as well as against Bookshop Santa Cruz, Artisans, Cat and Canary, Game a Lot, a number of other stores or businesses downtown that support the anti-homeless laws. However, I haven't heard back from Kim, the mediator, as to whether Martin has responded. I doubt he has. But no, I have not specifically invited him to be on the air, but we could call him right now and invite him if he'd like, Becky.
Well, he certainly should have a chance to respond to some of the things you've said. It's only fair.
Right. Would you like to perhaps talk to him yourself and tell him he's on the air and then see what he says?
Oh, sure. I'd be glad to.
Okay, well, we can give Stuart a call. He does have a phone number. In fact, what we need to do is find that number. We'll be doing that while we play this tape, and you can kind of keep abreast of that while we try to dig up Stuart Martin's number. Actually, today is New Year's Day. I don't think we're going to find him in his store, but who knows? Maybe we will.
Well, I don't know. Those merchants, they like to make money every day of the year.
All right, let's see what we can do. And here is a tape on this whole issue. Again, we may not hit it right in the middle, so be patient with us.
Clean porta potties, and if need be, some straw.
December 22nd, later in the day, here's an interview with a man on the street who was apparently physically abused by Stuart Martin.
Yeah.
After the purse thieves and the girlfriends are done with the two hosts,
to get to talk to us, and they send me back out to talk to the police.
Of course.
And of course, the police don't do anything either.
Okay, now you can file.
I'll tell you more about that.
The complaint about us for assault, because it sounds like Chris, you were assaulted. That's what it sounds like.
So I'm just speaking as a witness. I'm not going to let that go down in my town, and have the police help cover it up. They didn't even ask me my name. Or what do I care?
Well, I've spoken to you before, Chris. You've got a sign, houseless, hungry artist, spare anything at all, please help. Thanks. And we talked before, and we did a little interview once, a month and a half ago. You were down the way. How are you feeling? She wasn't able to file a report about my sister Martin.
Hey, hello.
How did you find out his name?
Well, he eventually gave it up when he was by the cops.
You know, a year ago, we had a table set down in front of the ID buildings. We were protesting the ID buildings harassing the homeless people. And you might consider doing the same thing again.
Yes, I was thinking about picketing.
Let us know if you're interested. If you are, I'll give you my number. Give me a call and come down and help you if I'm around.
Okay. Sounds good.
I apologize for recording this. You know, you asked me not to. Is it okay if I record this?
Yeah, it's okay. I want to get back to running my song.
I'm sorry. I'll let you go.
I said this young man is the one legal person on the sidewalk that's been here a while. No. With his son.
Where is the juggler?
Well, at the same time, the juggler is passing his bowler hat around with a very good spiel, out loud, and raking it in. And my, you know, he ought to cut some of the people that are willing to put up with the laws in on his take.
Copy my name.
So that was an incident on December 22nd, 1995, where two people, Chris and Sam, Chris was apparently assaulted by Stuart Martin by his report, maligned, evicted from his store, and slandered, accused of theft. And Linda LeMaster witnessed some of this, including the assault, and then attempted to file, she and I both tried to file a police report about this later, and that's another story in itself, and we actually recorded much of the attempt to get two police officers to do that. But right now, we have another possibility. I think Becky, co-host Becky Johnson here, is going to attempt to reach Stuart Martin by phone to give Stuart a chance to tell his side of the story. Would you say, Becky?
Yes, I'm concerned that we're not balanced enough here. And
we're going to balance comments, KSCO.
Okay.
So here she is. She's dialing that number now, trying to reach Stuart Martin on New Year's Day, which may be difficult, but who knows? They say those merchants are operating all the time.
We just try.
You could get through there.
We try and do what we can.
Tell me it's on the air.
Let me turn the mic thing down.
And that phone is ringing. We were lucky we got Mayor Rutkin last week, but will we be able to get...
I'm not even sure that they're open on here.
Yeah, no, I think they're probably closed. What a pity. Well, maybe on Friday we can call this man.
They're very busy right now.
They're probably pretty busy.
Christmas sales.
All those non-homeless people, of course.
The homely
people, yeah. The homish people.
Yeah. Non-thieves.
Non-thieves. Yeah, all those people that aren't thieves who are richer, so they can afford to be...
ethical.
Ethical, yes. Yeah. They can afford to be ethical. Ethics really is a rich person's delight, you know.
Maybe we tip them a little too much, Robert.
Hey, Kirby Stewart's listening to the radio.
What do you do? Don't answer the phone.
Right? Well, it sounds to me like we're out of luck here. So let's try again next week, perhaps.
Okay, Stuart Martin, if you or some of your friends are out listening, we would very much welcome to hear your side of the story.
Yeah, we want to hear all sides of the story. Stuart is, of course, invited to come on the air anytime he wants. Though sitting in the same room with him might be a trial, but I think I could probably deal with it. If I had a strong, perhaps a clothespin or some other kind of anesthetic mask.
Maybe one of those Newt Gingrich buzz bags.
A barf bag would also be useful.
Of course, you'd have to go into Bookshop Sanitors to get it, which might be a problem.
Well, I think we're going to have to move on here, Becky. The phone ring has a certain kind of lulling quality, but we're trying to wake people up and not put them to sleep.
We tried.
That's our attempt to get Stuart Martin on the line here on our New Year's Day show. I guess we can continue, although I invite...
Can I address an issue that was covered a little earlier, and that is about passing out flyers or having tabling or perhaps distributing petitions, gathering signatures. I'm confused. I thought that there were constitutional protections on freedom of speech and that would preclude any city ordinance saying that you can't do this in front of our outdoor coffee spot.
Right. Well, you would think so, and there is in fact a little known part of the United States Constitution called the First Amendment. People, of course, pay little attention to these archaic laws, particularly when they impact business adversely here in Santa Cruz. But Neil Coonerty made it a point after I and John Hamilton and Linda Edwards had tabled in front of the store for 3 months, seeking an end to the sleeping ban, because Neil Coonerty was the mayor in 1993 and notoriously resistant to any kind of modification of that truly criminal law. He had passed through the city council, through deals with Kennedy and Byers and that whole gang of wonderful liberals or progressives he loved so much, that one of the provisions of that code, you can actually read the code section if you want to check it out later, it's Municipal Code 5.43.020 Section E. And that section states that, you know, you are not allowed to sit down anywhere on the sidewalk or on any object on the sidewalk between the sidewalk, between an open-air cafe and the curb. So you can't have a table in that area. Such is my understanding. I know you can't sit, for instance, on the obelisk.
You mean a table other than the tables they have out there?
Well, you know, you're right. You can sit at the tables they have out there, provided, of course, you're a paying customer with the permission of the store. But, for example, if you attempt to sit on the square, I guess it's a water pipe box in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz, and they have another one up in Cathcart and Pacific. It's a flat, square surface. That is illegal to do that. And I believe it is also illegal to sit at a table that you set up of your own devising in front of an open-air cafe, of which there are now a number along Pacific Avenue. And the point of that was to make sure that messages that were hostile to the businesses were not essentially given permission to be there. Now, I don't know that any case has been taken to court around this law, because it is of questionable constitutionality. No question about that.
It certainly raises some question in my mind about how that could possibly be legal. And I've done some petition signature gathering, and I was kicked out of Costco.
Oh, really?
I was not in Costco. I was out in front of Costco gathering signatures, and they came out and kicked me out.
Kick your butt down the road, eh?
Yes, and I wondered if they really had a legal right to do that.
Well, it's interesting. I think that there is an argument to be made that they can't, and if you get an attorney who's willing to pursue it, you can do it and sue them for false arrest, because there has to be, if the place is normally open to the public, then I think that they cannot exclude you unless you are engaging in behavior that is somehow significantly disruptive. But I'm making this up as I go based upon what happened to me at the free meal in 1990. In 1990, a coalition under Karen Gillette and a kind of a de facto coalition and Sherry Connable, who actually I'm now, both of them, I'm on better terms with each, decided that they wanted to have me excluded from their spaces. And their spaces were included a meeting of the Coalition for a Safe Place to Sleep, which met at initially at the Resource Center for Nonviolence and then at Sherry Connable's house when I kept attending the meetings. Attending the meetings, by the way, and saying very little. You've heard me in my most dynamic when you heard the tape at the beginning of the hour of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless meeting, which I'm going to play again at the end of the hour, by the way, so you can, you know, get an exciting second look at that tape or second listen. But I was also
some young children, cover your ears.
Cover your ears when that happens. But the other space I was excluded from, or they attempted to exclude me from unsuccessfully, was the free meal. And the reality there was I was holding kind of quiet, off-to-the-side meetings of a group called JUST, J-U-S-T, which is an acronym for Join Us, Sleep Tonight, meaning we were fighting a sleeping ban, we were fighting for a legal place to sleep. We were actually kind of a left-wing pressure group to kind of give Sherry Connable's group an opportunity to succeed. We figured that they would negotiate with Sherry Connable's group because our group was more radical. Well, Karen Gillette's thugs, or workers, as they called them in those days, thugs. Shermick says apparently they're still thugs, came out and, you know, began throwing food at us and screaming at us and telling us to leave and so forth. And we were trying to close down her meal and any number of other wholly fabricated and irrelevant and untrue charges. And Gillette then decided that she tried a little power play. She, at that time, she held a had a vote to say, how many people want politics at the meal? There was about, most people had left anyway, but she got a majority to say they didn't want politics. Then she said, how many people want Robert Norris evicted from here? And she couldn't get a majority for that. But the story later appeared in the Sentinel that I was evicted from the free meal. Not true. I've never been evicted from the free meal. She's tried. And Brian Koepke at one time has called the police on me as her second in command. But this is all ancient history. It hasn't happened recently. And I want to say that Karen Gillette this year has been quite improved in her behavior regarding people's political rights around protest. That has to be said, and it should be said again.
Yeah, I think we're getting back down to why I had to stop over 30-something fights over there at Karen's place, and it seems to me that I'm useless, never did anything, but she never knew what I was doing. She had no idea. Did she ever come to me and talk to me? No. And in fact, it seems to me, I guess she thinks that I'm a liar because there was a wrench found in her living room there in the house. And I said, oh, that's mine. She says, well, I'm not going to give it to you just because you say that. Well, being a priest and a natural doctor, I figure anybody would accept my word. Well, she didn't, and I had to wait another whole day to get my wrench back. But that's not really the problem. I think the thugs, I think Karen's people shouldn't be there. I think there should be other types of people there, and I think she's still letting a lot of the riffraff run around, especially when I tried to get Gizmo out of there, and seemed like he ripped off my locker and about 15 others. Now he's finally out of there, but he's been kicked out of there 7 or 8 times over the years and is still there. They know he's a junkie. They know he's a thief. They know his mouth just garbles garbage coming out of the worst trash words I've ever heard. And I'll tell you what, he is one of the people I'm looking for.
And Gizmo, if you're listening, call in.
Yes, feel free, Gizmo, to come and give your point of view on this. Again, the issue seems to be... Carl, do you want to say something?
Just that it's easy to judge, and it's not as easy to get involved. And, I mean, there's so many different ways you can do it, so I'm encouraging everybody, whatever the talents are, to do it, because I'm going to have to say goodbye to the panel.
Hey, Coral, thank you for coming.
Thank
today.
You, Coral.
Everyone out there, and wave goodbye to Carol from your Coral from your and try to get her name straight, will you? From CB, as we call her. Thank you, CB. Come again. Come again.
All right.
The point that actually the reason I raised the issue of Well, it wasn't really Karen Gillette I was raising the issue of. I was raising the issue of access to public spaces. And the question of access to areas, let's say, is the Coonerty Cafe law constitutional? Well, in Berkeley, Proposition O has been declared unconstitutional by a federal judge. And that's a whole kind of big package of anti-homeless laws, rather milder, in my view, than the Santa Cruz laws that were somewhat copied from the Santa Cruz laws. Or, say, rather, all of these anti-homeless laws seem to be coming out of the same place, a kind of a think tank mentality. It also presents ideas of the hosts. They're all going to have a little characters in Mickey Mouse type uniforms with, you know, hosts on the back with big grins, kind of friendly fascism running around the mall, supposedly helping the tourists, but actually simply eliminating those people from the mall that are considered to detract from business, and at the same time using a new set of anti-homeless laws to do it. Sit on the sidewalk, go to jail. Ask for dining after dark, go to jail. Set up a table after dark, go to jail. Laws that are designed to make the mall kind of a Disneyland North.
What kind of an interesting situation we have here in Santa Cruz where it's illegal to sit, it's illegal to speak, it's illegal to read, and it's illegal to sleep.
Well, you've got to have money to do these things. As any decent citizen knows, the poor tend to simply degrade the property values in an area and make living more of a trial for those who are the truly deserving rich or weller-to-do, let's say. You are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. The opinions expressed here are those of the opinion expressors, as you might imagine. And this is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadside, Civil Rights with Your Coffee, 10 to 12, Monday and Friday on 96.3 FM here in beautiful Santa Cruz. It's New Year's Day. Our phone line is open. You're invited to call 427-3772. We're now going to show you what happened when Linda LeMaster and I tried to file a complaint on behalf of these people who were harassed by Stuart Martin. But, hey, looks like maybe could it be Stuart Martin calling in on the phone?
Oh, Stuart, I hope it's you.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing, Robert?
Hi, Al. What's up?
A lot. I'm listening. I've been listening.
All right. So what conclusions have you
come to? Very interesting. There aren't really any conclusions, but Shroom, he's a good guy.
Well, he's smiling, and I think he appreciates you saying that.
Anyway, I have a problem.
What's that?
Well, the problem is that I don't look homeless, and I don't know what to do about it.
Well,
I have to find out a way that I can prove that I'm...
You know, I think we can really help you with that problem, Al, because you need it to be probably the first customer at our new homeless boutique. This will be what we're going to be setting up downtown in order to help the ordinary middle-class person understand what it is like to be homeless.
Yeah.
What is it like to be beaten up, shoved around by Stuart Martin? How does it feel to be kicked out of the Java House by Kevin with a friendly smile?
Yuppies need to come in.
We need to get the real taste of these experiences.
You know, how does it feel to be kicked out by, who's the other guy in the Java House?
Stuart.
Be kicked out by Stuart, but go in at night and be friends with Kevin.
Oh.
And when Kevin finds out that Stuart said, hey, I found out that guy's been coming in here for the last 6 months, and he's been thrown out years ago. And
are you speaking of someone we know, Al?
Huh?
Could this be a person that you know well?
It's possibly me.
Oh.
But, but I go in there anyway. I don't give a shit.
I see.
I go in. See, the thing is, I think it's the consciousness or the mentality, whatever's behind whatever you do. The